There's a place some of us go each fall. A place where the ring of a bell filters through the covers and hurried shouts of "Bird up!" bring everybody to attention. A place where the playful puppies around our house are transformed here to driven bird finders. And where there is confidence in the slow pace of the silver-muzzled old veterans. Where our friends tell the same old stories each year, and none of us seem to mind. Where great shots are forgotten, and epic misses never fade. Where an old gun will have a story to tell, if only it could speak to us. Where all the good seats are claimed by the dogs. If you have a camp, you know these things all too well. If you don't, well, you're always welcome here. So pull up a chair, tell us about your favorite gun or dog, and we'll admire the birds together and talk the night away by the fire. Welcome to Bird Camp. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the Bird Camp podcast. I am your host, Joe Schwenke, and of course, all the business meeting stuff. Let's get this rolling. Thank you, of course, to the listeners and a few new Patreon patrons. Again, I appreciate all of you that support or even those that listen. And again, thank you very much there. If you want to help out the podcast in any way, of course, the easy ways that are free, like, share, subscribe, review, all those things that you can do on the various socials or on Spotify or on the Apple podcast, any of those. Kind of put us a little higher up in people's rotation or suggestions, and that would be great. If you do want to support with a couple of bucks here or there, right? You could kind of support me. I was going to say a cup of coffee, and Starbucks came to my mind. But if you're not in the market for $10 coffees, a couple bucks a month on Patreon is plenty there, and I appreciate all the Patreon the supporters. That's what they are. They are patrons. Other than that, a few upcoming events. I think it was last episode I mentioned the Andy Cullen seminar coming back. The Laocoon Gun Dog method will be coming back to Blackbriar Spaniel in June, and I'm excited for this one. It's a little cheaper, a little shorter, but again, any time you can spend with Andy working that flushing dog is going to be a great time. And so please, if you are thinking about some fun training, something where the handler learns, that is something to definitely consider as well. Would love to hear from you correspondence-wise, of course. Message, emails, or on the socials, mi.birdcamp@gmail.com. I am on Instagram at birdcamppod or at birdcamp on Facebook. If you do send me a friend request on there, I've been getting a bunch of them lately. Some of them are clearly ISIS, and some of them I just don't know you. So please, if you want to, message me as well so that I know to look for your request and not put you in the long-term holding pattern of people I'm just not sure about. So please do that. And with that, we're going to get into our first guest. It's the only guest tonight. I must be out of practice with this. But anyway, I have Ben Beeman on from Michigan Pheasants Forever. Welcome, Ben.
Hi, Joe. Thanks for having me.
And it's been a little while since we talked last.
It has. I had to dig back in my emails and look to see how long, so I knew what I needed to talk about. And yeah, it's been about 2 years.
and I wanted to get you on to just for all the usual reasons, right? What's new in Michigan? Ways that we can help the pheasants. A little bit about habitat around here as well, but. We can always start out with something more fun, and when I found out that you're looking for maybe not your grail gun, but your next gun, I figured, let's start with that. Let's roll right into this one and forget the business part for a second.
Yeah, that sounds good. Fortunately, my wife's at work, so she's not here to overhear this conversation, but I'm on the hunt for a Fox AE. Not super picky about the gauge, but looking for something in decent shape and, you know, a lot of the ones I come across have, you know, 30-inch barrels and are choked modified full or full. I'm looking for something a little bit shorter and a little more open that would be functional with, you know, slightly more modern loads that that I can use. I've looked at a lot of them over the past year or so, and the hunt continues. I found some that were close to what I was after, but not quite. So somebody has one.
Oh, yeah. Yep. And
let me know.
And a little more open chokes. You're thinking maybe more for grouse.
Not even quite that open. But, you know, even if I could, well, I would certainly use it for grouse. But, I mean, if I could find something and improve cylinder modified, I think that would suit about everything that I do.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
With the right loads.
Are you preferential to any certain gauge a little more? Because you said it didn't really matter, but are you thinking maybe that the 16 is the gentleman's caliber, of course?
I certainly wouldn't pass up a 16. I wouldn't mind a 12. 20s seem to be really hard to find in the Foxes right now, but I'd love a 22. So any of those I would be open to.
Yeah. I'm a 20 gauge guy. Of course, everyone probably listening already knows that. They've heard enough of me. But that first one, though, is right. What's new in Pheasants Forever in Michigan here since last we talked? That's a 2-year span.
Yeah, so there's a lot of new stuff to go over. I guess for starters, the team here looks a lot different than it did 2 years ago. When we talked, I think Bill van der Zouwen, our longtime regional representative, had just retired, I think. And we may have even hired his replacement at the time we spoke, but she hadn't started yet. So we have a new regional representative. Her name's Melissa Gildemeister. That role, the regional representative role, they're kind of like the liaison between our chapters in Michigan and the national organization. They help the chapters navigate like state raffle laws and, you know, other best fundraising practices and stuff like that. I think we had just hired, but again, also hadn't started our first ever regenerative ag and conservation specialist. And I can't remember if I talked much about that on our last call or not, but we brought on a new position to work with farmers to try and find opportunities on farms to implement conservation practices that benefit pheasants and other grouse and wildlife in a way that it benefits the farmer's overall bottom line, you know, by identifying those areas within a field that are losing them money. You know, they're not growing crops at the rate that they need to be turning a profit on those specific acres. So, you know, and you see that driving around Michigan. You see spots that want to be wetlands, spots on the edge of woods where the corn and soybeans just look pretty sad.
Yep.
You know, they're sinking fertilizer and fuel, herbicides and stuff into those acres, just like they are the rest of their field. But those spots aren't giving them the return. So identifying those areas and proposing alternative practices, ideally, you know, conservation practices like establishing grassland habitat in those places that will actually benefit the farmer in the long run. So we started with one position in the Southwest. We hired Ryan Rich. She's from Northern Michigan, or Northern Michigan University, graduated from there and has a background in ag consulting. And then we added a second position about it in this past fall, in October, in the southeast part of the Lower Peninsula. First position was in the Southwest, and Ryan moved over to the southeast position. And then we hired Alex Wubben-Zudweg for that Southwest position. So we've got two of these staff people in Southern Michigan working with farmers. Just trying to get in with a subset of landowners that we've struggled to reach in the past. The other change in personnel, Bill Fisher was our longtime education and outreach coordinator. He put on the bulk of our learn to hunt and learn to shoot events for youth and adults throughout the state. He retired at the end of September, and we hired a gentleman named Matt Leffler to fill that position. He's hit the ground running. Just at the beginning of December, he started. He's been churning out educational events like crazy, and he's got lots coming up too. So we're really happy. But yeah, it's a team of five now. It was a team of two before I started. I was the third, and so we've been expanding and have some hopes to add another position or two in the next few years.
Okay. One of those two positions then you added there, the farm liaison, maybe is a good way to kind of describe them. They're going to do a lot of things then with helping that farmer identify acres, like you were saying, and then get that into maybe CRP, or are there, is that maybe their kind of a role as like a CRP biologist?
Sort of, yeah. They work with farmers to connect them with, you know, resources. Once a conservation practice that they could implement is identified, they help connect them with a resource to implement that if they're eligible. And so if the practice they identify as having potential on a particular farm is a grassland restoration, you know, USDA programs like CRP are high on the list of what you'd go after, so they can connect them with those people at USDA to try and get them enrolled into those programs. We're sort of in the very early stages of writing a pretty significant grant proposal that I'm really excited about, to kind of create our own internal habitat program for farmers. Not unlike CRP, but more with working farms in mind. A lot of the bigger, more profit-driven farmers, CRP is a hard sell for some of those guys because they see it as giving up land that is their, you know, that they're farming. That's their business. That's their livelihood.
Yep.
And even if they're making money on that, those acreages through CRP, a lot of them, it runs so counter to the way they're wired. So this new program would use some of our newer research on pheasants and how they respond to farmland to try and just implement farming, like true farming practices that can benefit pheasants. So, like diversifying the crop rotation and including more small grains, adding some grass, but grass that can be grazed or hayed a little bit more frequently than CRP can. So that's very early, but something I'm real excited about and hope to have up and rolling in the next year or so.
Right. That would kind of make farming look like we used to have it maybe back in Grandpa's day.
That's exactly the idea. With a modern twist, doing it a little bit more precisely in the right places for the right reasons, to try and yield the most results. But, I think it has potential. We've got support from, initial support from folks at USDA for the idea, and some U.S. legislators from Michigan are interested in supporting the idea. So I think the idea has legs. We just need to roll it out, and hopefully we'll be impacting more private lands around the state and growing more pheasants on farm.
Right, and that's going to benefit. That's going to benefit a lot more even than the pheasants too. Just getting a better habitat on, maybe derogatorily, I've termed some farms just kind of a wasteland, and so you're going to kind of bring that back into something that wildlife would use, of what, 100 species, 200 species?
Oh, certainly north of 100, and there's a number of species of greatest conservation need here in Michigan that benefit from that kind of habitat. It's not just benefiting pheasants. It'll benefit all sorts of stuff. You do it in the right way, and a lot of things like haying, it's about timing. Like, yeah, haying can be pretty destructive to pheasant nests, but if you're cognizant of when you're running the swather, you can avoid enough of that damage. And the idea on these working lands is, the practices might not be quite as beneficial as like CRP, where you have no disturbance during the nesting season at all. But we're not going to get that kind of a practice on these particular acres. So we need to come up with a plan that, you know, might not be 100% of the benefit of CRP. But if we can get something on there with 60% of the benefit of CRP and get it on a lot more acres, we can have a pretty big impact overall.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So yeah, excited for that. Other stuff that's new, we have a new national initiative called PATH, Public Access to Habitat. And it's highlighting or, you know, attempting to create more access to private lands for public hunting. You know, like we have our HAP program here in Michigan, the Hunter Access Program.
Mm-hmm.
Basically, our fundraising people are seeing a lot of interest in these kinds of programs throughout the country, and they asked all of our state coordinators, such as myself, across the country last year to, you know, pitch some ideas on how we could improve, create a new program or improve existing programs in our state that do just that, create public access to private land. And mm-hmm. So I put in a proposal to try and boost HAP, get more grassland properties enrolled in HAP in southern Michigan, and they liked the idea, and so we're going to try and roll that out here this year. A lot of people who pheasant hunt in Michigan have probably noticed a decline in the number of properties enrolled in HAP in the pheasant part of the state over mm-hmm. the last 10 years, and even some of the ones that are still enrolled in HAP, the grassland habitat is on many of them is gone. And a number of things have happened there. Many of those properties were in CRP, and their contracts expired, and they've gone back to farmland. So they're no longer providing that pheasant habitat anymore. The other thing that happened is, the price for hunting leases, particularly deer hunting leases, has gone up so much in the last decade that it's hard for that program to compete. It's a much tougher sell for a landowner to, you know, take a much lower rate to allow public access, or, you know, they could just, you know, sign a lease with someone for a lot more money and just have one or two people hunting their property.
Right.
So that's made it tough, particularly in the southern part of the state where you're close to population centers. Farmers, landowners can get a little antsy about the idea of having just, you know, anybody and everybody out there on their property whenever they want.
Yep.
So we're putting together $80,000 to try and enroll 2,000 new acres in the southern lower that have managed grasslands on the properties. Going to target new CRP contracts and just try and dangle a big enough carrot in front of those landowners to compete with those private leases and try and get more properties signed up. So we're really hopeful that we can get some results from that program. I've hunted HAP a fair bit over the years and would love to see more properties enrolled in down here in the southern part of the state.
That's an idea I hadn't thought of. And, there's plenty of them out there for all the listeners. There's plenty of things I haven't thought of, but that makes a lot of sense in that case of maybe you guys have something, there's an incentive from somewhere else, and stacking those incentives to produce a result like that would be great, especially down here too. That's one of the things Southern Michigan lacks, I still think, and I'll bang that drum a long time, is enough opportunity. Just there's a lot of people, there's not a lot of public acres, and when you start thinking about what's on those acres and what it's managed for, the more opportunity we can get, the better it is for those that want to try hunting or any of the other outdoor sports that get out there and enjoy it. But that's an awesome idea.
Yeah, we're excited about it. Michigan's in an interesting place. It's easy to look at figures, you know, like we have the most public land of any state east of the Mississippi. That's great.
That's like saying that you're the best of the worst.
Right, right. And, I mean, that's not to scoff at the amount of public land we have. We do have a lot.
Yeah.
But it's just not all in the right places, right? We have so much of it is the UP and the northern lower. And don't get me wrong, I'm an avid grouse hunter, and I love the availability of public land up there. But down here, where the bulk of the population is, the bulk of the human population and the bulk of the pheasant population, there's the potential pheasant population areas, there's just not as much down here. And I mean, it's not that there's not opportunities and there's not public land down here, but there could be more. And HAP, I think, is a good solution to that, to create a better patchwork of public land. Small farmland-type parcels with some good habitat can provide some great hunting.
Yep. Well, and with that, we'll take our first commercial sponsor break. That is with Second Chance Bird Dogs. A perfect fit doesn't always happen for a puppy. A dog at Second Chance learns its job. Birds, guns, and teamwork with the handler are milestones along a journey to a new home and life. The training a Second Chance Bird Dog receives helps it make the most of its second chance. And Collar Clinic, located in northern Michigan and providing e-collar, GPS, and other dog-related electronics since 1988. Collar Clinic can provide new and reconditioned systems and accessories of many major brands. They also repair current and older models. And when you're ready to upgrade, also have a trade-in program for working and those non-working systems. Get the tools to make your dog exceptional at Collar Clinic. And be sure to use the discount code BIRDCAMP on your next purchase. All right, anything else on the what's new since then? And we'll move on.
Yeah, I've got a couple more. Before I do, though, I'd be remiss if I didn't mention that National Wild Turkey Federation is supporting that HAP initiative in a pretty major way. So thanks to them. You know, if you have listeners that are NWTF members, you can feel good about where some of the money you've raised is going. It's helping us with that initiative. So
okay.
The other couple of things that are new, you probably remember or are familiar with the Michigan Pheasant Restoration Initiative.
Yeah.
That is continuing under a slightly new name. We have made it a little more generic. We're calling it the Michigan Grassland Coalition. The reason behind that is we're trying to cast a wider net, attract some conservation groups that, you know, the pheasants specifically never resonated with well. You know, typically the non-hook and bullet conservation community, like the Nature Conservancy and large organizations like that do a lot of grassland work, have a lot of habitat that they manage, but they don't do it specifically for pheasants. So
right,
taking a more habitat-centric approach, expanding the geography a little bit. We're looking statewide now instead of just southern lower, and trying to build that coalition to a point where we can have more impact statewide. So we've had two meetings now with what we consider at least the initial group of conservation organizations, and we're hoping to invite more and keep going.
Excellent.
Other than that, last time we spoke, we mostly talked about the Adopt a Game Area program. That's continuing. We signed a new 3-year agreement with DNR to continue that relationship between PF and DNR. So look to see a lot more habitat work being done on grasslands on state game area throughout the southern lower. But we did remove, kind of in coordination with the changes to the MPRI, we removed the geographic restrictions on the original Adopt a Game Area program. So now we're free to pursue grassland projects on state land, really anywhere in the state, anywhere that grasslands are wanted by DNR property managers, we can help. So
excellent.
Excited to see that continue. It's been a big one for us, and we're looking forward to doing more. And we've also been doing a little bit on federal land as well. Last couple of years, I've had an agreement with the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service to restore. The agreement was for 100 acres. I think we've over-delivered a little bit. I think we're more like 110, 120 on our 5 waterfowl production areas and then Shiawassee National Wildlife Refuge.
Okay.
So, cool. Yeah, lots of public land habitat work going on, and we'll be continuing moving forward.
All right. So kind of, I guess, without hot spotting too bad, but at a certain point, you got to name some names and brag yourself up. And that's kind of part of you being on again. So you've had some work on the federal, you've done mostly
with the Adopt a Game area. In fact, I even helped raise some money at one time for some of those things. But how many projects overall? Do you have kind of a number in mind, or a number of acres and a number of projects?
Well, I've just got some, you know, large-scale overview bullet points on numbers. Mm-hmm. I'd say we're creeping up on $2 million raised since 2017 for these habitat projects, and also creeping up on 4,000 acres.
Okay.
And that's, up to this point, has largely been in the southern half of the lower. Since the last time we talked, we've done quite a few properties where we've done a lot of projects, and I don't mind naming property names, and listeners out there, these are their honey holes. I apologize, but this is my job.
And it's a honey hole because you were in there.
Right. But we've done a few projects at Verona State Game Area up in Huron County, Potterville State Game Area, Eaton County, Crystal Waters State Game Area in Monroe, Cornish State Game Area in Van Buren County, Gagetown, I think that's Tuscola, Port Huron County in St. Clair, Port Huron State Game Area in St. Clair County, Oliver Township in Huron County, Cass City State Game Area, that's Tuscola again, and then the Maple River Gratiot Saginaw State, or Connector State Game Area. We had a project there this year. So lots of places. Most of them are grassland restorations. A few of them are invasive control in existing grasslands where, you know, where you've got autumn olive or other brush species creeping in, degrading grasslands. So go in there and grind those out, and treat them with herbicide if necessary. But, you know, some of those properties like Verona have a pile of grass on them, and we're almost reaching critical mass on that property specifically in the potential grassland, but grassland, you have to maintain it. So there won't ever be an end to potential projects in places like that. It's just the kind of project changes a little bit.
Yep. I noticed, and we'll bring this up, I think, now, and that is the DNR had a Facebook post not that long ago, a couple days maybe, about being careful with your fire. And of course, I may be not a notorious pot stirrer, but I like to ask those kind of pointed questions occasionally. And so my snarky comment in there was, well, what do you do about all the times when fire is beneficial? And I think I had four different habitat types that I thought was beneficial for fire, whether it was warblers, whether it was grassland, even a woodcock singing grounds will benefit from fire. And there was one other in there as well. And I got actually a decent response from somebody who just was curious and actually had it seemed like an honest question. So it went good there. But I guess quickly then, just refresh everyone's memory then, especially say like with Verona, is fire going to be a good answer later?
Fire is the best answer for maintaining these grasslands. And we don't do enough of it in Michigan. We don't do enough of it on public lands, and we don't do enough of it on private lands either for grassland management. You know, part of that is rooted in policy, and part of it's just rooted in fear. You know, Smokey the Bear was very effective at it was an effective marketing campaign for getting people to be more careful about fire safety. But in a lot of ways, it pushed people too far in their fear of fire, and we've suppressed fire on the landscape for so long that it's really, not only is it hard to get it done because of some of those policies that have resulted, but it just terrifies people. People see a field full of switchgrass on fire, and they don't tend to think, "Oh, cool, they're just improving the habitat." No, it's scary to people. And so you have to fight that misperception. And right. There's other states in the country that never lost their fire culture, where prescribed fire is still heavily utilized on the landscape, particularly in states like Arkansas, the Deep South, and a little bit out west too.
Right.
But Michigan is not one of those states.
The quail states.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep. Yeah. But Michigan lost that, and it's tough to get it back. But you know, as long as you're, you know, if you're going to use prescribed fire as a management tool for habitat, you know, just make sure you're doing it right, carefully, because fires can get away from you.
Yep.
Like we burned out at my dad's property in Hilldale County on Saturday. He's got about 30 acres of restored grass, and we try and burn every year in patches to set back the woodies. We fight raspberry a lot and autumn olive, and fire is really helpful. And you mentioned woodcock.
Yep.
We had woodcock flushing out ahead of the fire, and then we're back in the field as soon as the fire was out. I watched a couple of woodcock scurry through almost no cover at all, seemingly a little confused at their hiding spot, was there 1 minute and is gone the next. Then Sunday morning I took my younger setter out and ran around the field edges, and those birds had moved out into the hedgerows and stuff where there's a little more cover. But it's good. It'll keep it open for them, for singing grounds, and that's what they're doing out there right now for the most part.
Yeah, that restoration of that meadow, if it's more of a natural setting outside of just a field, those brushy edges, like I'm watching around the yard here, I have to go through and physically manipulate some of that to keep the brush back and regenerate it that way. But yeah, the woodcock are usually here, you know, about 70 yards from this window I'm looking out right now. And yeah, that's, in my case, I haven't used much for fire, but there's going to be a plow coming. I've used all kinds of other tools to keep the meadow and that soft edge transition into the wood line where it's supposed to be and in good health. So good. I kind of love hearing about the woodcock in southern Michigan. I think I'm on that bandwagon now of championing those birds especially. But I don't know, is this a good time then to kind of drop right into the new grant that you have?
Sure, yeah, that segues into that pretty well. So we've got, this was last fall, we got a grant from the DNR Wildlife Habitat Grant Program, and it's a partnership between PF and RGS AWS. They hired a new counterpart for myself last year, and his name's Larry Partridge, and he kind of got thrown into the fire right in the middle of grant season, was working on some grants for Zone 1 and Zone 2, and he and I got to talking, and I was kicking around ideas for a grant of my own, and we kind of came to the conclusion it made sense to, you know, partner up on the grant and include some woodcock projects in my grant, which then we would sub-award some of the funds to RGS for on state game areas in southern Michigan, mostly adjacent to or nearby pheasant habitat work that we've been doing over the last several years. So came up with kind of a slate of projects. I've got grassland projects for pheasants on two properties in that grant. One is at Maple River State Game Area in Gratiot County, and then the other is at Stanton State Game Area in Montcalm County. And then RGS, their sub-award projects are at, Edmore State Game Area in Isabella County, Gratiot-Saginaw State Game Area, but right between those two counties, Tamarack Lake State Game Area, and Potterville State Game Area, and those are both in Eaton County. So their projects are going to be manipulating brush, largely alder stands, to set back the succession and ensure that those stands are high stem density long term. So some of them are getting a little bit too mature. They're going to go in and grind them down to basically nothing, and then have them regenerate into a nice thick woodcocky stand of alders.
Yeah, and that's, two of those are pretty close to my house, something that I would probably end up going to if I had a few hours here or there. I know I'm always in the habit of driving north of M10, which is kind of the basic knowledge of what you do to go to birds. But Edmore needs cut. Edmore needs ground. Edmore needs burned. I love that it's nearby. It just needs some work. It's not that far north of me. Same with Stanton too. You know, I've drove through there scouting, and both of those places just need some work. And I actually drove through some other state land the other day, and I was on my way home actually from Walmart. I had to buy a battery for my lawn tractor, so I cut through the state land looking for turkeys on the odd chance that they're near the road so I can tell my wife where they are to go shoot one. And all of a sudden I'm looking around, hey, this was a lot thicker of a stand last year when I drove through here, and all of a sudden there's sunlight and everything else, and I'm looking at it going, well, okay, somebody, and I want to maybe get him on the podcast, is the guy that manages Flat River near me. Like, you know, darn it, this is looking pretty decent again. Like we got a guy with some sense. So I don't want to give away all my next to my house sort of places, but we have, I'm going to have to throw some credit to the guys that are usually, you know, shoved in corners and made fun of more often, the DNR folks. I think this guy's worth keeping. So
good. It's great seeing management get done on state land, especially in the spots where it really needs it.
Yep.
You know, a lot of times there's policy restrictions on certain spots, but when you can get stars aligned and you can get stuff done, you can really benefit the habitat for game and non-game species, and really improve the hunting and the off-season birding, and all that stuff improves.
Yep. Down here, I mean, we used to always talk trash about Southern Michigan, and now all of a sudden, you know, every hunter is going to benefit there. I'm looking at these piles of evergreen boughs all just kind of dumped in piles in there. I'm like, okay, I got to remember this spot for Grampy. He's going to want to come back here too with his hound. And, you know, everyone in a way benefits from this. So that's something I want to keep in mind. Is there anything else in that grant that you wanted to highlight?
I think it's just an example of how conservation can span the boundaries of what we traditionally think of as, you know, like our little silos.
Mm-hmm.
It's developing partnerships like this with other conservation groups. I think it benefits us both. There's definitely some cross-pollination between the two organizations. I'm sure there's PF volunteers and supporters that look at this and say, oh, hey, and, you know, I didn't know RDS was that active in this part of the state. Like, let's go give them a look and see how we can help support them too. And I think it works in the opposite way as well. So, I've had successful partnerships over the years with plenty of other conservation organizations as well. I work very closely with my counterpart at DU, and who I used to work for Ducks Unlimited before PF. I have good relationships over there. There's plenty of opportunities for collaboration between wetland work and grassland work. Ducks need grasslands, pheasants like wetlands as well. So,
yep.
Anytime you can join forces and have a bigger impact by helping each other, it benefits everybody and all the wildlife even more so.
Yeah. All right. With that part, before we go on with the notes further, our second sponsor break is with Field Armor, the toughest dog vest on the market. Also, they have a new skid plate coming out. You may want to check that out. Help protect your dog from cuts, scrapes, and impalement in the field. A dog vest is much less expensive than an emergency vet. Use promo code BIRDCAMP, BIRDCAMP with no spaces, for free shipping. Don't miss out on some of their other rugged upland products. Visit fieldarmorusa.com today. And Pine Hill Gun Dogs, located in Rockford, Michigan. Pine Hill offers boarding and training for your gun dog. Whether it's the pointing or flushing breeds you love, Pine Hill Gun Dogs wants to be a part of your success this season and wishes to remind you that the greatest conservation tool is a well-trained dog. With that, the next thing up, what kind of events do you have coming up or ways that I can get involved? That's always, I mean, for PF or RGS or any of those other ones, right, there's probably a list of banquets and anything else, right? I was part of a couple of youth days earlier this season already.
Yeah. So, I mean, generally, you know, people's minds go to banquets first when you have this conversation, and those, those are traditionally our you know, most visible events. Spring banquet season's over now, just wrapped up.
Okay.
I don't believe we have any banquets scheduled until early fall, but those are coming. So everyone can keep their eyes out for those. But in the meantime, we do have a lot of other kinds of events, and having a full-time education and outreach specialist helps us to do a lot more of that stuff. We have we post all our events on our Event Center page, and Joe, I can give you a link for that so that you can highlight that if you want to.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, I'm looking at it right now. I've got it pulled up on my computer. We've got 12 upcoming events posted on there. A number of women focused events. There's Women on the Wing Sporting Clay Shoot. There's a second Women on the Wing shooting event. There's a Women's Shotgun Academy up in the Thumb. Oh, let's see. We've got a couple chapters have their seed distribution days coming up where you can get food plot and native grass seed to plant on your own property.
Montcalm just had one, and I'm storing a seed trailer here at the house from an old chapter, waiting for the next chapter to take over. And there's whitetail seed in there. There was, I mean, it's all 10 years old now, but there was corn. There was some Siberian kale. And whether or not I guess Pheasants Forever cared, at about 5 years old, I started giving it away to people to try, because I just couldn't stand to let it sit there in there anymore. There was a bunch of samples for whitetail stuff with the brassicas and the turnips and clover. And so I was like, hey, try some Pheasants Forever seed. And they're like, well, hey, get a membership if you feel bad, but try it, you know. otherwise, it's going to be 10 years old. I'll have a trailer full of rotten seeds. So, you know.
Sure.
I mean, you like quail? Try, you know, and then, you know, it may say that it's for quail. But if you plant a quarter acre patch of Blizzard Buster or something that's high stem density, all those hollow stems, and whitetail decide to just bed in the thing like crazy, you've helped something you weren't really noticing right away. And if you put up a handful of sorghum here and there, watch the songbirds hit that stuff.
Oh yeah,
it didn't.
I mean, it didn't
take long.
Major ingredient in birdseed.
Yeah, it's a. I plant a little bit of millet for ducks, and all of a sudden I'm looking at Japanese millet showing up in my garden 100 yards away from the duck hole. Like, why are you here? But I know the answer, but wow.
Yep.
So, you know, the seed days are a great thing, and I'm going to definitely second that recommendation. Go there if there's a sample size of something. I loved watching it grow, and the benefits across the board for multiple things are there. So just because maybe you don't think about pheasants, the rabbits, the whitetails, the songbirds, pick what you love to look at, and there's something out there for them.
Yeah, absolutely. So yeah, there's a number of those coming up soon. Those typically happen this time of year before, you know, folks are wanting to plant.
Yep.
There's a youth 22 rifle shooting class coming up in Frankenmuth.
Cool.
There's a couple of new hunter pheasant hunts coming up in participation. There's some run by us and some in participation with Safari Club International that we work together with them on those events. But yeah, lots of cool stuff. There's Matt's hosting a pattern your turkey gun range day for people that have never done that before. You know, it's just all about, you know, it's not all about pheasants for us. It's that position in particular, it's just about getting people outside involved in shooting and hunting. So
pattern your turkey gun. Someone should show up there with a camera.
Yep. April 17th.
I'll have a funny story. I will digress on this one because I don't know if I've told it on the podcast. I know I haven't told it on the podcast. I was 18. I celebrated my 18th birthday with buying a gun. And I went down to Gander Mountain, and it was a 12-gauge, 3-inch chambered 870 Express. And it was just in time. It was a May birthday, so I buy the gun. And, okay, the following season, turkey season rolls around. And so we were hunting up at, we were staging out of my grandparents' place in Alpena. And so you got to pattern the gun. You got to see where it is. And at the time, Grandpa was alive, and he's out there on the back porch. He's looking at me, and I put the first shell in there, and it's just a target load. I just want to see where things are shooting. And I shoot the paper in the box, and okay, cool. And I shoot it again. Okay, yep, I definitely know what I'm doing now. And I grab I think at the time I was still shooting a 2-ounce number fives. Winchester had a 3-inch, 2-ounce load that you won't find it now in 3-inch, I think. And rack that in there. Of course, I'm 18 years old, and I'm sitting on the ground, kind of prop the gun up on my knees like I would be if I'm turkey hunting, and I squeeze that thing off, and all I hear is him laugh, and I'm looking up at the sky. And he says, "You should have seen your feet. They were 2 feet off the ground when you pulled that trigger." And I believe every word of that. It hurt. When I shot the turkey the next day, I didn't feel a thing. But I had a healthy respect for those 3-inch magnums after that one. But if the turkey patterning is, it's for one, you really need to do it just to make sure that you have everything down and you squeeze the trigger and all that. But it's a hoot to go watch the people just do it. It's fun. But
oh, yeah. Yeah, definitely. So, yeah, looking forward to, you know, new ideas for events like that. Matt's coming up with some good ones, so we're excited to see how they go.
Oh, good. Good. Moving into this next one, we could have put this earlier on in the conversation, but I left it in the notes where it is. And when you said the Grassland Coalition and that you had said you're kind of opening up the Adopt-A-Game area from just pheasant habitat into grasslands, I've got, like, dinging church bells in my mind, sharp tails.
Sure.
Do you have anything in the works yet, or can I encourage you further to start?
Oh, you don't need to encourage me at all. I've been kind of working this angle for, you know, a couple years now, trying to lay the groundwork for us to start doing some work up in the UP on sharp tails. And it's coming around. It's going to happen. It's still early in the planning process, but the Michigan Sharp-Tailed Grouse Association is involved in the Michigan Grassland Coalition. Awesome. I've been talking with them a little bit more about potential opportunities where our assistance could be helpful. And I've got some more conversations to have with DNR and federal staff up in the UP, but it does seem like there might be some, you know, near-term opportunities for habitat work to benefit sharptails, like around the Seney area.
Oh, yeah. So you'll work with Heather up there, too, then?
That's the idea, yeah. So, like I said, I've got to talk to Heather a bit more about it and see if there are, you know, some stuff she wants to do in the near term, but I'm hopeful. And then another opportunity potentially on the horizon is if the stuff with our PATH program, the HAP stuff down here in the southern Michigan, if we can, you know, accomplish what we want to down here, I think there's an opportunity to expand it. And I know HAP is the bulk of the sharptail hunting ground in the eastern end of the UP. You know, maybe there's an opportunity to try and magnify that program up there as well. So,
oh, definitely, yeah, yeah.
Because I'd love to see more of it. It seems like HAP is a popular option for landowners up there. So maybe increasing the incentives up there isn't what you need. It's just having more funding available to sign up more property.
Right.
So we'll see. I'd love to see more huntable land in the eastern UP for sharptails. I personally have never gone and hunted sharptails in Michigan, but it is on my to-do list. One of these years I'm going to do it. Just haven't yet.
I've had dogs point them, not within the season, and I've pulled up on a couple and thinking they were roughs at first, and then later on I've had some roughs get away because the chance of a sharp tail was there, and I couldn't see that big round fan in gun range, and so there are a number of rough grouse out there living because I couldn't shoot yet. They're cool. They're something that we like to chase in the fall a little bit, because we're Eastern UP for our bird camp. And next thing you know, you're just like, darn it, it was a sharp tail. It was the perfect point. The dog deserved the bird, but not this time of year. And either way, we've had some good fun with them. But yeah, that's, I do need to eventually go out there and in the season with some intent, try to get one. But I know it's going to cost me, what is it now, $400 or more for a bird?
Yeah.
Yeah. If I get one, it's going to cost me.
And taxidermy bill. I got you.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's not really considered, it is in a way a finable offense if I get a sharp tail.
Yeah.
And I'm unwilling to maybe pay what's close to my entire week's expenses for a bird camp to stuff one and not eat it.
I get it.
Maybe I'll have to shoot fun. More than one. That's what I'll have to do.
Right. Yeah, there you go. Get one for the pot and one for the wall.
Yeah. So.
Yeah.
I'm going to do.
I've shot plenty of sharp tails out west. Never here.
Never Michigan. And I'll admit I'm always a hometown fan when this stuff happens. So I would love to see sharp tails out west, but then that grail bird might be a Michigan sharp tail. As far as if you want to stay within the state, I have a Michigan pheasant. I have a fan up here on the wall from a Michigan rooster out of a state game area. And actually, that was probably a restoration project, an MPRI project back in the day. So I'm glad I did it when I did. I had my boys along with me. They were way too young to shoot. They were still very early elementary. So an hour hunt, I had a Michigan rooster. They were giddy. I was ecstatic that I found one and I had it pointed with my short hair. But things to think about going forward is we're going to have maybe more of that grassland and more of those opportunities.
That's the idea. And, you know, I'll say this year was a good one for me. I do the bulk of my pheasant hunting on public, mm-hmm. you know, largely on these projects that I've been working on over the last 7 years. And this year was great. Numbers were up. Largely over the years, I've seen pretty consistent numbers. But this year, something good happened. And then just about everywhere I went, and I didn't go far this year. My wife got a promotion and had a lot more responsibility at work, and so was spending more time there. So I was trying to stay closer to home here in Southeast Michigan. So I didn't stray too far. But got into birds just about everywhere that I expected to, and more birds than I expected to find. I shot very poorly this year, but that's okay. I think I sorted out my shooting issue. I'm not getting my cheek down on the stock as much as I'm supposed to. I don't know when mm-hmm. that started, but this summer is going to be the summer of trying to fix that problem.
Right. Oh, that's I had that same trouble. It was only for one day, but it was the worst opportune day ever. But I'll do our final sponsor break here. That is Wild Card Outfitters and Guide Service, who, when you go on their day, try not to be a poor shot like I was. A Michigan-based outfitter specializing in mentoring new hunters with an educational and positive experience in the outdoors, offering upland bird hunting for rough grouse and woodcock, walleye charters, waterfowl hunting, guided bear hunts, and more. Contact Wildcard Outfitters and Guide Service for one of these unforgettable experiences. And Aspen Thicket Grouse Dogs, located in located in the central UP, offering grouse-centered dog training and home to Uncle Grouse. Aspen Thicket knows that the rough grouse is essential to developing the skills to effectively pursue the king. From puppy development through finished dog work, you can trust Uncle Grouse with your hunting companion. If you're dissatisfied with your grouse hunting, try doing what your uncle told you to do. And I'll add real quick about Aspen Thicket Grouse Dogs. They have a couple of August events. One is I think it's a puppy seminar, don't quote me, as well as they will be doing another Bonassa Bonanza seminar on the weekend. Of course, I will be up there helping wherever I can. I told him, yes, count me in. I'll do whatever it is. I'll do the dishes. But I want to be back up there. I'll have my son Caleb up there as well if he
he'll say yes. He had a great time the last time. But those there. And then, Ben, we have only one or two more things, I guess, on the list. So, anything final before our final question?
I think we touched on everything that I was hoping to go over. A lot of new stuff, and we're excited about the vast majority of it. We've got a few extra things in development that are, too early in the process for me to really speak about yet, but I'm excited to hopefully talk to you about next time.
Absolutely.
So, something to look forward to.
So no new breaking news, You heard it here first.
Not this time, next time.
Hopefully. All right. Well, I'll hold you to it. Anyway, so the final question, and we kind of touched on the AE Fox earlier. So this one, I thought, because of your work with a conservation organization, this might be a better one, or at least maybe more unique. Maybe I'm wrong. But what natural happening would you like to witness?
I've been thinking about this a little bit, and I think we talked about last time. I went to college out in Wyoming. Spent a lot of time out there, and I would love to see a reset of the habitat in some of the mountainous regions of not just Wyoming, but the Intermountain West, where so much of that timber is old and dead from beetle kill. And I hesitate to say I want to see it all burned down, because even though that is the crux of what I'd like to see, I'd like to see a lot of that habitat return to a more early successional state that can, support higher densities of the animals that we all care about, and look the way it looked, 50 or 100 years ago. There's so much of that mountainous forest in the West needs management of some kind, whether it be fire or thinning, and just it's tough to get done because of regulations and lawsuits that fly at the feds every time they try to propose to do any sort of habitat management. Something needs to happen, and I'll say that I'd like to see it happen in a way that is the safest and most effective at turning that habitat clock back and getting more early successional habitat on the ground out there.
Ooh, that'd be cool. Quite honestly, I think and this goes back to me, I guess, as a teenager, I wouldn't mind seeing the fire. Just literally witnessing a mountainside of dead, beetle-killed pine just, burnt offering all the way up the side of the mountain. Now, that's me, which is why I am not that's why I don't touch fires. But, I mean, like you said, too, right? I think we drove through Yellowstone once. I was a senior in high school. That was the big family trip, was we made it to Yellowstone. And driving through a fired area that was a year or two into the reset, and remembering the news stories, oh my God, Yellowstone is still burning. And I walked back, we drove down through there, we didn't walk, and the elk were grazing in these burned out areas. And everything was turning this bright green, and because it was early, it was right after school had gotten out. And to think that after all that panic, there's a herd of elk standing next to the road, grazing in, oh my God, it's on fire. Except now it wasn't. And yeah, I would love to see that. That would be a great one to see.
Yeah, absolutely. And I have watched a mountainside burn. And it is a sight to behold. It's terrifying and incredible all at once.
Yeah.
And a few years ago, a big patch of the mountains where I hunted blue grouse and elk and deer in college burned. And I haven't hunted in those spots since, but I'm excited to go back now that we're about 3 years removed from the fire.
Mm-hmm.
I went there the year after the fire. And hunted blue grouse, but I stuck to some areas that didn't burn because I just wasn't sure that the grouse would be in there significantly yet that soon after the fire. Maybe I'm wrong, but I stuck to some of the unburned areas. But I'm hoping to get back this year or next and hit some of those burned areas and see what they're like.
That does make it sound exciting. And I've never been good at finding mushrooms, but it seems like the mushroom people and a burn go hand in hand as well. I'll take their word for it, and I will trade them venison for mushrooms or whatever else. I do not have that eye. Those people are wizards. But
I'll tell you, morel sticks out pretty well on a burned background. It's a lot easier than it is, you know, creeping through bottomland hardwoods here when all the ground is black. You've got some nice gray or blonde morels. They're a little easier to see.
So maybe I do need a... No, I'm not burning a thing. I always look. It's going to be a miracle someday. I'm going to trip over a log and fall into a patch of them and wonder why I never noticed them before. But that's good. Anyway, I'm going to thank the listeners one more time here. Thank you all for listening. Thank you on the Patreon page for supporting the podcast, for the sponsors. Again, look for those upcoming events from PF as well as the other conservation organizations. And of course, help me for free with like, share, subscribe, review, all those hot button social media topic things that people ask you to do to support a podcast. And of course, correspond with me at the email, on Instagram, or on Facebook through the Messenger. Or hey, you can comment on any of the posts. That's a great way to find me. I do at least check that every day, at least once. So with that,